Blog Talk Radio.
Spiritual Connections Radio. As you know, we're on about once a month now, and we are going to be airing some special shows on Saturday nights as we head towards the end of the summer. And we hope everybody out there has been enjoying the summer and staying safe and enjoying time and having fun. So I want to just mention to you, if you want to find out more about the shows and the different guests that we have on, all of our shows are available for replay. We're up to about 2,000 shows in our replay archives right now. And we have so many great guests and everything. You can go back and listen to all the different shows. So to find out more about our guests, their websites and everything, their links are available on our website. Access to the replays of the shows, you can go to our website, which is spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And with that, Pamela.
Hi, Mark. Hello, everyone. Hey. Thank you for listening tonight.
Yeah, great to have you on, as always.
Thanks. It's a lovely evening here in Florida.
Go ahead. Who do we have on with us tonight?
Well, tonight we have a very special treat for you. We've got two people on with us tonight, a woman named Melissa Joy, who is best known for her ability to engage people from all over the world. To embrace their true authentic power through accessing universal consciousness. She has been teaching Matrix Energetics transformational seminars to people from all over the world since 2008, and she is also the founder and instructor of the M Joy of Being seminar series dedicated to practical personal empowerment for extraordinary living. She's also written a book that she's going to tell us about as well. Then there's Dr. Richard Bartlett. Dr. Bartlett is a chiropractor, also a matrix energetics teacher, and he has a fascinating way of explaining matrix energetics, which we'll get into in a little bit on a more intricate level. But right now I want to tell you his quote, because it's so interesting. He says, matrix energetics is a new paradigm that utilizes the principles and science of subtle energy in quantum physics, coupled with the incredible power of active imagination and focused intent to produce physical variable effects that often defy rational explanation. Miracles happen every day. Matrix energetics provides a technology and scientific framework to allow for their everyday occurrence. So, fascinating information, fascinating subject, and I want to get right to it. Melissa and Dr. Richard, are you there?
We are here.
It's nice to have you on the show. Thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Yeah, it's great having you both on.
Thanks for having us. We're happy to be here.
Good.
So, you know, I think what I want to put out there to the audience is Melissa, can you go ahead and give out your website? Because I know, well, everybody's listening to the show, they're going to want to go out to the website and check out all the different things that we're going to be talking about.
Most certainly. For listeners that are interested in learning more about matrix energetics, all the information that you need can be found on the website www.matrixenergetics.com. That spelling is M-A-T-R-I-X. MatrixEnergetics.com, www.matrixenergetics.com. And if you can say it five times backwards, then you're ready for a seminar.
But you'll be banished to the fifth dimension.
Right. And we're just playing with the listeners. If they don't know us yet, then one of the things they'll come into recognition of pretty quickly is we're quite playful and we're quite silly, as serious as we take the work that we do in Matrix Energetics relative to healing and transformation. We do it all through the element of play. So we'll probably be relatively goofy throughout this interview. So pardon us in advance.
Well, good.
All right.
Well, let's start by talking about the two of you in terms of how you got into Matrix Energetics. So Melissa, first, I'd like to start with you. Tell us your story.
Well, my story doesn't even feel like my story anymore because I've transformed and evolved so much since I first encountered this field known as Matrix Energetics in January of 2006. But basically, I had been very ingrained in the pharmaceutical industry. I'd spent almost 15 years developing blockbuster pharmaceutical drugs, marketing them, and even running late-stage clinical trials. And over probably the last 4 or 5 years of my tenure in that career, I started to feel very out of integrity with a lot of things that were going on, a lot of information that was not being disclosed to the public. And I was feeling a dissonance within myself that at the time I didn't know how to describe. I now know in retrospect it was part of what some might call a spiritual awakening. But what was really going on for me was that I had a disease that I couldn't get a correct diagnosis for, and I had access to all of the various medical experts around the world because that was the nature of my job. And depending upon the type of specialist that I would see, my symptoms would be diagnosed based on their frame of reference or their perceptual bias. So if I would see an oncologist, I would have one diagnosis. If I would see a rheumatologist, another diagnosis, a dermatologist, another diagnosis, and I would get different pharmaceutical treatments to correspond with those symptoms, and that would then create a whole other host of symptoms that would then require additional treatment. I was getting very, very frustrated because I wasn't getting better, and this sent me kind of on a search for other options through the realm of complementary medicine. Now, at the same time that I was trying to find a cure for what was ailing me and what was becoming a very debilitating condition that was affecting the quality of my life, I was still working really, really hard. And I was actually in London at the World Congress of Neurology, and we were getting ready to present some very compelling clinical results for a drug that was about to get approved by the FDA. A lot of time and effort and money had gone into this particular event. We had rented out the Tower of London, and it was just this big extravaganza for this new blockbuster treatment that we knew had some problems, but that data had not yet been revealed. And I went out to get something from a store about 5 minutes before the event started, and I basically got hit by a double-decker red bus and thrown roughly 40 feet across the street, and was very badly injured and sort of wiped off my my blood and the tears in my clothes, and went back in and participated in the World Congress of Neurology. To make a very long story short, I had a lot of injuries, and this led me eventually to a Matrix Energetics introductory seminar where I heard this crazy chiropractor was doing some weird stuff with energy medicine, and I sat through the course of the presentation, and there was something so incredibly familiar about the energetic language of watching Dr. Bartlett, who at the time was the founder of Matrix Energetics and was doing these introductory events around the country. And I sat with that familiarity that led me to a Matrix Energetics seminar a few weeks later, and over the course of one weekend seminar, all of my symptoms that had basically plagued me for a number of years completely went away just by sitting in this field, not by having any direct interaction with anyone, not even Dr. Bartlett. And all of the damages from getting hit by the bus pretty much went away, and I really found my own sort of sense of equilibrium and flow and balance and healing that is available to everyone through this field. And, well, that convinced me that there was something really powerful going on in the field of matrix energetics, and that led me to continue studying in matrix energetics with Dr. Bartlett, and studied with him for a couple of years, and then began working with him and then teaching with him, and we've been teaching together basically every seminar since 2008. So that's a very long-winded answer to how the universe jettisoned me via a double-decker red bus off a path that was not part of my spiritual calling into something more meaningful.
What a story. Thank you so much. That was it was a long answer, but there was meaning in every part of it, so I think it was necessary to tell the whole story. Now, Dr. Bartlett, I would like to talk to you about your story. You, as referenced by Melissa, were the founder of Matrix Energetics. How did that start? How did you put this together?
I didn't put it together. It put me together. I mean, yes, I put the elements of it together over a period of years, but it found me. I didn't find it. I didn't found it. It found me. Basically, I was... what we did not mention, which is I have another medical degree. I'm a naturopathic medical doctor, and in the states where I am licensed, that's a primary care provider. But regardless, I basically, because I'm crazy and probably obsessive compulsive, I decided to go back to medical school the second time when I was 44. Now, I did not realize that it's different when you're 27 and when you're 44. I'm not going to recommend anybody do this, and I certainly don't think it's necessary to find yourself. But what happened is I was in Seattle here where I went to school, and I was a chiropractor, but I did not have a license to practice in the state of Washington, which I had to pay for my own food. I had to pay for my children. I had to take care of all the needs of the family. So I had to drive 13 hours one way every other weekend from Seattle to Livingston, Montana. And this is through, in bad weather, this is through some pretty icy and dangerous mountain passes. The drive was in the middle of the night, often in blizzard conditions. And I was going to school full-time in naturopathic school, four-year medical school, taking 31 credit hours a semester. So basically, I think what happened, at least what allowed me to notice, is these long trips are kind of like Charles Lindbergh's trip across the Atlantic. I don't know if you know this, but he was out of his body frequently when he was flying across the Atlantic. He was flying about 100 feet above the waves. He was actually bungee corded in place so he wouldn't fall over, you know, and pass out and crash. I think that's kind of like a distorted Sufi school of wisdom. And so that's what happened. I stressed and stretched myself beyond my physical, emotional, and mental limits. And when I did, something cracked, if you want to call it that. And I had this little girl that came in at the end of a very long day after I'd been up, you know, driving all night and then working all day. And she had a lazy eye, and I know that children will bite because my son had some bronchitis problems, and you could do certain adjustments in the mouth, cranial adjustments, that could have helped the lazy eye, but I know kids bite because my son bit me like a snapping turtle. So I knew not to do that, didn't have anything else in my bag of tricks that I really could do, so I kind of was bemused and bewildered. And what wound up happening in my very disoriented, very tired state, I wound up rambling about this old 1950s Superman story where Superman helps a little blind girl get her eyesight back and then get restored to her family. And it's very heartwarming and 30 minutes along with the cigarette commercials that the doctors were promoting in the 50s. Very funny. Doctors say, claiming on TV you should smoke because it will relax you. Yes, permanently. And so I turned after rambling this story. I told the whole story almost in real time. I'm sure the mother didn't know what was going on, but I had a good reputation there in that community and in my clinic, so she didn't mind. And when I got done, I said, I have no idea why I just told you that. And I turned behind me, and there was a vision of George Reeves as Superman, full color, 3D hologram, cape flapping in the wind, and his x-ray vision, which was yellow, kind of like in anatomy text, so you can tell what muscles and nerves and so on are. It was colored so you could see it. So this archetype of x-ray vision went into my little girl that I was attempting to figure out what to do with. I saw a blockage of energy there, quote, saw, and I touched where I saw because I didn't know what else to do. And when I did, the splash of light occurred, and she felt it, and I saw it. And all of a sudden, her lazy eye was corrected. In fact, she could see two of me, which is a component of binocular vision. The brain is what puts the two images together to form stereoscopic vision or depth perception. But it started out with her just being able to see two images, and then those images came together, and her lazy eye was, quote, cured. That's how it began. So the next day, the first person I touched, weird stuff happened. Next person I touched, weird stuff happened, and weird stuff continues to happen.
Not so weird for us.
Well, okay,
for most of our audience. So I guess one of the things I'd like to hear next about the two of you is, how did it come together? How did the two of you decide to go on the road together and teach?
We did not decide, really. She told me I could tell my story, so I'll tell the goose story.
Okay.
I was in San Diego, which is Melissa's hometown. I also was born in San Diego, by the way, but I left there when I was about three months old to come to Oklahoma, where I grew up. Anyway, I was teaching in a church on a, I think it was a Saturday morning, where they had me do a two-hour presentation. There was a bunch of people there who were listening to me. And it was a nice sunny day, and they'd left the door open because they didn't have air conditioning. They wanted to cool the place down. They'd left it open a crack, and I swear to you, in the middle of my talk, four geese came through the door in military formation. One leader in the head, and then two, and then one more, and going wah wah wah, and just honking and making this awful sound. They came all the way up to the platform where I was teaching, honked right at me for, I don't know, a minute and a half, and then turned around and walked back out again. And honestly, now I think they were announcing, Melissa, pay attention, something magical is about to happen, something more magical than usual. So I went to the next place that I had to talk. I was doing two presentations that day, why I do not know. And it was a little seaside church in San Diego. And there were about 27 people there. And I thought people had just followed me from the previous place, because people tended to do that sometimes. And so I asked if anybody heard me speak, and no one had. So I talked about, well, a very weird topic, turtles and the resurrection of the dead, which I won't necessarily get into. We don't have the time for that. But Melissa was fascinated because she'd never heard somebody just completely make up a speech off the cuff before and actually have it make sense. And, but what's funny, what's really funny, I interacted with her, at the time, fiancé, and he was interesting. And then Melissa, when I raised my hand, I told her, I said, I need to interact with you as well, or you two won't match up. So when I interacted with her, she went into something we call in the seminars frequency 18, and actually did such a back bend spontaneously that her head was peeking between her legs at me, which was very interesting. And that's how we met.
Well, let me just add that what caught my attention was not only the element of ridiculosity, but there was this familiarity to, we'll call it an energetic language, that is how we get into rapport with the field of matrix energetics. And so I was watching for the very first time this conversation that was nonverbal that Dr. Bartlett was having with a number of the participants. And even though it was spontaneous and it was not preconceived, there was such a familiarity to what I was witnessing. It was as though I was coming into recognition with this universal language that we now understand is the language of the field of matrix energetics. Now, I thought that he had paid a bunch of people to have these experiences in order to get the naive people to register for a seminar. So I thought the room was filled with plants. And that whole theory had to get thrown out the window when I had an interaction and then had an experience that defied my expectations. And that's really what Matrix Energetics does. It comes in like a coyote shaman and will completely transcend your sense of what reality might look like, show up as, or be experienced as in the very next moment. And it will invite us all to kind of let go and allow for a different configuration or a different experience to unfold. Sometimes it'll show up in a very aggressive way through movement. This frequency 18 that Richard was referring to is a very common way that the field of matrix energetics will move us out of resonance with limited or stuck or rigid patterns of consciousness that can often look like disease back into a state of flow. So that basically 30-second interaction that I had with the field was exactly what I needed in order to begin to reconfigure my sense of self in relation to my personal reality and my relationship to universal consciousness as the all. So, yeah, it was ridiculous, but it got my attention.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to ask one question before I hand this back over to Pam. You know, you kind of gave us a really good explanation that, what is this program and stuff like that. Just to kind of emphasize a little bit more for some of the audiences that isn't quite understanding this, what is the example of a common student that have come in, and why would they come to take this seminar or this program?
Well, I'll say first, we have had businesses, children, police officers, every imaginable entity that you could conceive of, and they all take it because they have a special calling that they feel within inside them. But I'll let Melissa elaborate on that.
Well, I mean, our typical student is pretty much anyone and everyone. Initially, when the field of matrix energetics first became somewhat popular, there were a lot of so-called healers, a lot of people that had been engaged in energy medicine and had studied a number of different modalities. And as with, you know, any study of any modality, at some point the modality will become limiting and we will continue on that search for something more. So initially many of our students were so-called healers. Over the last 11 years, really the field has evolved to reach absolutely anyone and everyone. So we have engineers, we have lawyers, we have nurses, we have housewives, we have little children. There really is no typical student demographic other than anyone and anyone who is interested in expanding their experience of so-called life. And for the listeners that are saying, well, what is matrix energetics? I know that we've really not defined it in this particular interview, and we often say that we don't like to define it because any parameters that we put forth as a definition limits what becomes possible and what can become available. But with that being said, we define matrix energetics essentially as a field of information potential. It's a morphic field that allows for instantaneous and lifelong transformation at the physical, mental, emotional, relational, spiritual, financial, environmental levels of consciousness, because it recognizes that consciousness is omnipresent and it will interact with any pattern of awareness or any pattern of information. And all that's really required to come into rapport with the field is a sense of openness and really a state of curiosity. So it's a flexibility of consciousness that is much more expansive than any sort of rigid modality. In fact, we don't even really call it a modality, although it can be used as a modality. Matrix energetics is really more a way of being rather than something that you do.
To me, ultrasound is a modality. I dislike the term. It is a field effect, like Einstein described quantum physics as being a field effect. It is an intelligent field that is self-regulating, continually updating, and learning and growing with every person that contributes to it. So it becomes like a software program that's had thousands of engineers working on it. It's quite a phenomenal thing because it has transcended any sense of limitation that I, and I certainly have plenty, might have had when I first conceived of what it might be. And when I will tell you, because of my chiropractic background, I originally, in my first book, I wrote about it, talking about two fixed and rigid points, and you find, you know, the one that makes the other one more rigid, and that was how rigid my concept was. And it was based upon a reintroduced motion into the body concept. And it is so far beyond that at this point, so far beyond any of my conceptions of what it could have been at the time, I will say it is most definitely not a technique. However, techniques have their place. I think they're special field effects as well. And I think techniques work because it is a field effect. And as long as you obey the rules, quote, of the field, you will get that effect. And when you step outside of those rules, that's when you don't get that effect. Now, that's both good and bad, because if you've got something that's working and it continues to work and it works for the majority of people, well and good. Call it a technique, call it a field. I don't care. But what really is important to me, because I've studied over 40 techniques and have two medical degrees, is what happens when these things fall outside of your expectations. And what I realized is the beauty of this and why I don't even call it healing. I'm a blue healer. I'm trying not to raise my leg to the furniture, and I'm trying to be house trained, but still, it's a difficult process. I'm old, and you can't teach an old dog new tricks, you know. But the field itself is continually self-teaching. It will teach a person at an unconscious level. We've had, quote, like Melissa said, quote, healings that happen when Melissa and I had no idea that anybody was even interacting with us. In the Bible, in the New Testament, it talks about where the lady that has the issue of blood from her for 30 years, and she thought, well, if I could just touch the hem of that trailing garment, and she does, and then Jesus turns around and says, who touched me, for I have perceived virtue went out from me. He's talking about a field effect. That is a field effect. And that's how matrix energetics seems to work. It is a self-intelligent, super powerful, very engineered initially, but now it is engineering itself. Kind of like if you had Melissa? The things that you start out building and they build themselves. Basically, it's moving towards its own point of awareness or transcendence. So that field now, I like to say, and Melissa says as well, there is no point to the two-point, the so-called methodology, because the field has transcended all of that. Although we teach it as training wheels to be able to interact with this, and anyone and everyone can interact with it, and their very first experience is pretty much always successful. Over 10,000 people have noticed that.
A really key principle in understanding field effects, and particularly morphic fields, which that term was coined by biologist Rupert Sheldrake in order to explain how consciousness essentially organizes itself non-locally, and this organization is done through something called torsion fields, which Sheldrake does not talk about, but a number of other scientists do. But field effects and morphic fields in particular function based on habit. And so what that means is that the more people interact with a specific morphic field, the easier it becomes for other people to learn it. So tapping into a morphic field such as matrix energetics that has been taught to tens of thousands of students around the world at this point, there's really nothing to really even learn other than how to notice that you are connected to the field, because the minute you're connected, a resonant there's resonance that is established, and all of the information that's inherent to that specific morphic field becomes available to the individual consciousness. So learning matrix energetics has become progressively easier over the last decade, so much so that people just hear the name matrix energetics and they start having experiences where their reality starts to unfold in a different way. Now, the value of coming to a matrix energetic seminar or reading the three matrix energetics books or listening to the audio programs is that one is able to form conscious references and distinctions for how this field is expressing. And that is what enables an individual to really be able to pay attention to noticing what's different, not what is the same. And that is a fundamental principle in matrix energetics, because the more we're able to notice what's different, not what's the same, the more we're able to establish resonance with an ongoing state of change in an expression of flow. And everything that we do in matrix energetics, we do essentially from the field of the heart. It is very much a heart-centered practice or way of being. And we teach the physics behind heart-centered awareness, because an understanding of how the field of the heart is a torsion field can enable our students to recognize how their heart field connects them into various morphic fields of consciousness, but more importantly, universal consciousness and its infinite potential before it spins off as a separate torsion field of information and experience. So we really teach our students what we call interactive reality creation, where we become conscious co-creators with the universe, and we are empowered to notice and experience and choose where we're going to resonate as a result of modifying our resonance and choosing resonance. We create and perpetuate different experiences. And so we have a whole system on how healing really occurs, whether it's true or not. Dr. Bartlett and I would both say, we don't know. Nothing is absolutely true, but is it useful? Yes, absolutely useful.
Wow, that's quite an answer from both of you. Thank you so much. I have a question about imagination as it relates to the morphic field and as it relates to matrix energetics. How does the imagination, you know, and imagination is a tricky thing. I'll qualify my question by saying that you know, you generate and expand your world based on what you can imagine. However, Dr. Bartlett, you referred to this once before where you were explaining how you cured this little girl of lazy eye, and the concept of the Superman movie and imagining or seeing it on one level and touching that light or that image on another level. So, you know, I think Melissa brought it up once or twice as well. I'd really like to get into how the imagination affects the morphic field in the world of matrix energetics.
Well, it doesn't really, as far as I can tell. I mean, it can at some level when you get to a point where you're honing your awareness, but I don't even like the word imagination, because things that people imagine are not necessarily things that they can touch. Like the story of Doubting Thomas, you know, says, well, you know, if I can put my hand in your side and if I can stick my finger through your nail holes, which, by the way, would have been through his wrist, not through his palm. So all these cases where you have the stigmata are for the most part imagined or hypnosis of a morphic field. But, of course, that field is real. Because when you imagine, and this is where it's tricky, because you imagine something enough, imagine billions of people, let's say billions, well, at least certainly millions and millions, have imagined this, have looked at this. How strong is a field like that going to be? Well, it's going to be pretty immense. So when you imagine something, or let's use the word in the Bible, the thing I feared has come upon me. When your imagination is fearful, then you can create a vortex or a resonance with all sorts of things happening that you imagine. But, of course, also you realize that most of people's fears actually never occur. So the things they fear the most may not ever happen. But the habit
of resonating, and this is where Melissa was talking about Morphy Fields, the habit of resonating with fear creates a connection with all the other people who have these imaginary fears, and how strong is that? That's as strong as a quantum field, maybe stronger, stronger than an atomic bomb. So imagination can be useful, but mistaking imagination for seeing is something that Don Juan's teacher, or Don Juan's imaginary teacher, Carlos Castaneda, Carlos Castaneda, Don Juan's the imaginary teacher, talked about, which is there's a difference between looking and seeing. Seeing would be where, like with Superman, I did not expect to see Superman. I did not imagine Superman. I did not have any desire to see Superman. So what I think I saw was a projection of my of an archetype of my subconscious that allowed me to access, call it a part of the field of awareness that actually could do something to help this child. Now, it could have been the Archangel Gabriel, for all I freaking know, standing there in a red cape playing hide-and-seek. but the thing is your imagination able to heal? Yes, placebo effect. But what is the placebo effect? It's a field effect. So I will tell you that dogs experience this just as readily as humans. We have a lady that Melissa is just interviewed, Marla Steele, one of our practitioners. She works on horses. I worked on a horse and almost got knocked over because the horse, when I touched his jaw, which had been injured in a trailer accident, jumped back into place like a, I don't know, like a, what do you call those things, big steam shovel or something? I mean, it shot into place and the horse almost fell over on top of me. Now, it didn't, and it was fine, and I'm glad because that would have hurt. But it's not a matter of imagination. People connect imagination and visualization, and I absolutely do not like visualization because that is still your left brain controlling information in the way that you imagine you should. Matrix energetics, like Melissa said, is like coyote shamanism. It will sneak up on you. It will surprise you. It will show up in ways you couldn't possibly imagine.
Part of the reason why we make a distinction between imagination and perception in matrix energetics is that there is the art of intending to see something relative to imagination. And so we decide we're going to see something. We imagine that we're seeing it, and yet there is this part of our awareness that is acutely aware of basically the gap between where we are and what we are intending to see, and that is sometimes often all we are able to notice is the gap rather than that what we are projecting out actually becoming a probability that actualizes as experience. What we teach our students to do is to spontaneously perceive patterns of information, not deciding in advance, not seeing what they expect to see or decide to see or intend to see, but rather allowing for the apertures of the awareness to open up to be surprised by what shows up. What this process enables everyone to do quite easily is to move beyond, as Richard already referenced, the left brain logical linearity and the limited parameters of what we've been programmed to notice into an open system where various possibilities become available. And it might be that we are opening our awareness to establish resonance with something that's way outside of our personal perspective reality. And if we're only imagining, then we're limited based on kind of our conditioning around what we think is possible, and more importantly, our unconscious resonance with what we think we deserve and what we think is true. And so we really do this in a very playful way, so much so that everyone leaves a seminar with the ability to perceive the patterned potentials that surround us in any given moment through the symbolic languaging of the right brain. So we use imagination a lot in matrix energetics, but it isn't imagination from a traditional standpoint. It's really perception.
Well, that was a lovely answer from both of you. Thank you so much. And I wanted to clarify that because I made an attempt to it by saying, well, I want to qualify the word imagination, but I didn't do a very good job. I think it's clear now to our listeners the difference between imagination and perception, and that's really what I was hoping to get, that clarity.
We got that.
So thank you for that.
And that was an awesome question, and it probably came off of something that Richard says in his bio relative to imagination, but we kind of consider imagination and matrix energetics to be eye magic in action. And when we're in the realm of the magical, then we're not deciding in advance how the universe needs to show up. We're surprised and dismayed and in a full sense of awe at the inherent magic and wonder that is universal consciousness.
Wonderful. So, Mark, would you like me to turn it over to you? Do you have other questions here?
Yeah. Let me go ahead and just do a quick break real quick. Just want to let everybody know you're listening to Spiritual Connections Radio. And if you want to find out more about Melissa and Richard, you can go to www.matrixenergetics.com. And with that, the question I want to ask both of you, it's interesting, Richard, when you were talking earlier about, you know, if there was a huge fear or something like that, someone could tap into that energy. And I know that's not what you guys are doing with the work you're doing, but when you talked about that, it reminds me of, like, group consciousness, like fear consciousness and stuff like that. And I know, you know, in that particular situation, what you were talking about. But I guess what I'd like to know from both of you is, you know, if 70% of all the people on the planet do the work that you're teaching, what would you imagine would be the transformation of the planet?
Well, I don't think the planet would transform at all, because the problem is that people all have their own individual ideas, consciousness, perceptions, habit patterns around that, and their connection with those habit patterns as morphic fields. It would, and we don't teach people that there is strength in numbers. We teach people that one with God is a majority. In other words, that if you are the no thing, you have access to the all. But as soon as you think you're something separate, you now no longer have that access to the field. And I like to say, I believe that whoever's in the New Testament was more or less a quantum physicist, because when you say, I and my Father are one, I think you're saying, I and the field are one, or I and this universal consciousness are one, therefore there is no distinction, there is no separation. And that's why you could actually say to a mountain of adversity, be thou removed, and it would be done. It's a matter of realizing that since there is no separation, there is no reason to gang up on a pattern and attempt to change it.
I think that's a good answer in that situation, because what you're saying is, which was the end result I was looking for, and that is, what would the planet and all the people on it look like if there was no sense of separation anymore?
Right. I don't know, and neither do you. Because if there was no sense of separation, it wouldn't even be a question, because we wouldn't probably even be able to perceive an answer. Because the thing is, if there's no separation, we're not talking about we are one or a Coca-Cola commercial or something. We're talking about a universal consciousness that actually does not care about human conditions. I do not think that universal consciousness is human. I think the quality of the heart is actually rather alien or inhuman. The field does not actually love or care in a human sense about people's maladies, problems, the state of the world, etc. The field cares about itself. Now, there's another saying, I think it might be Isaiah, I can't remember, but draw nigh to me and I will draw nigh to thee. What I think is, the more you resonate as this oneness, as this field effect, the more you become like it, the more it moves through you, the more likely miracles are to occur, not because of you, but in spite of you.
Excellent. What were you going to say, Melissa?
Well, I just wanted to add that, you know, would it even require 70%, or, you know, what exactly would the 100th monkey effect be? But, you know, most importantly, what this field reflects back to all who come into contact with it is in essence the truth of what and who we all are. Now, at a certain level, we could call that unconditional love. We could call it impersonal universal consciousness. It is that part of ourselves that is inherently connected to absolutely everything, that which is inherently whole, perfect, and without the need for any movement. That is our core essence. And universal consciousness with its infinite potential has infinite expressions. Infinite expressions means infinite individuality. And that means that while we are all recognizing that we are one and there is this unified field or unity consciousness that is available to everyone, we are all here to uniquely express our individual soul signature in a manner and fashion that essentially the universe has never seen before. So what I think would potentially happen if we reach that 100th monkey effect, and it doesn't necessarily need to occur through a field known as matrix energetics. There are consciousness expansion technologies as a movement in global awareness springing up all around the world. But I think what we may begin to see is that people will begin to really live from the field of the heart. They will really resonate with who they truly are, and they will no longer be resonating in fields of fear, fields of limitation, fields of other people's ideas around what success is supposed to look like and what fulfillment is supposed to look like and how they're supposed to construct their life. I think there would be more authenticity and authentic individuality as a direct extension of the recognition that we are all connected. And so more than anything, to me, what matrix energetics brings forth for everyone is the ability to really live as a limitless being, having the experience of limitation, but to be able to do so in a truly authentic manner. And that's what I love so much about matrix energetics, because it is all about playfulness and miracles and possibilities, and it is all about really coming into a cohesive relationship of self in relation to the all.
Beautiful answer. That is the nicer version of my edgy answer.
If you're all in agreement, I'd like to actually extend the show so we can get some extra questions in tonight.
I don't know, Richard. What do you think? Should we stay on longer?
That's up to you. Melissa is a very busy woman, and she may have a schedule. I don't know.
Well, I do have a horse waiting for me because I am speaking with that practitioner that you were referencing earlier in the interview, ironically, but I think she can wait. We can stay on longer.
Sounds good.
She was back in your field.
Ma'am.
Certainly.
Okay. I would like to talk about this morphic field or this connection to this, to our own divinity, to our own heart. Now, I think, Melissa, it was you that talked about fear and people that are connected to fear and begin vibrating at this level of fear and connecting to other people that are in fear. You know, that's sort of the shadow side of that that field. Is it the same field, or would you say that it comes in like rainbows, bands of morphic energy, where the fear energy would be perhaps lower and darker on the scale, just for sake of analogy, and as you move up into higher dimensional frequencies, closer to love, that they would the morphic field would change, or it would just be a higher level of the same thing? Or am I thinking this through too much?
No, that's actually
brilliant. Let me say one thing, and then I want Melissa to answer this, but the Dallas Cowboys represents a morphic field. The Catholic Church represents a morphic field. The little pink bands or whatever it is that you wear to support breast cancer, which is what it does. It doesn't support breast cancer research. It supports the morphic field of breast cancer. These things are all specific examples of morphic fields. Anything that has an identity that has been habituated and then made stronger through repetition represents then a field effect of morphic field. Now I will hand that to Melissa.
Well, we could put the Dallas Cowboys in the morphic field of the Catholic Church and see what happens there. I love this question because, you know, in my recent book, MJoy Practically Speaking, I actually profile the creation of the morphic field of fear, and I look at how it has developed and evolved over the course of time. And one of the things that I postulate in the book is that nothing really is inherently separate. As we've just kind of established in the prior section of the interview, you know, everything is connected in a unified field. If everything is connected in a unified field, then that means even the morphic field of fear is somewhat connected to, say, the morphic field of love. Now, it is a movement in awareness. In the same way that darkness is not necessarily separate from light, it is just movement away from the light, a resonance with the morphic field of fear is not necessarily separate from that which is love. It is just a movement away from that clarity and recognition of that which is love, which is embedded and imbued in everything. Now, fear itself is essentially love in a very confused, distorted, and contorted state of awareness. So, yes, it is a separate morphic field or torsion field of information that has its own identity that then becomes more and more empowered by virtue of individuals resonating in fear, and we're now programmed for fear. I mean, you turn the TV on and it's be afraid. Everywhere you turn, people want you to be afraid, and that is so that we are not empowered. But if we recognize that nothing is inherently separate and that even the fears that we are potentially experiencing in our own reality are really a love of something deeper, then we can move our awareness into the recognition of what it is that we are really loving rather than fearing, and that modifies our resonance. So a lot of what we teach our students how to do is to change up their resonance. Many people aren't even aware that they're resonating in this ginormous morphic field of fear, which has various subfields that keep us shackled into really more and more fear. So they're separate and they're not separate.
Okay, I think
in
that's
the quote, New Age movement is a lot, is tremendous fear. And I don't mind. In the seminars, Melissa and I will play good cop, bad cop, or blonde cop, the silver cop. I will poke at people's fears. I will talk about 9/11. I'll talk about Ebola. I'll talk about whatever's on my mind, because what I see in the New Age movement, particularly, but in people in general, is, oh, it's all love and light. Well, it sure as hell isn't. And so when people say that and they don't want to confront the things they fear, they're actually more fearful. And if you can take that and you can puncture that and look at the shadow as being distant from the light but not disowning the shadow as something, oh, I'm not a part of that, then you actually start to integrate the aspects of personality, aspects of self, and then you can dissolve the whole thing. But if you put one thing, like say, oh, I'm going to only live in the dimensions of light and love and have a nice day, you know, or have a good one, as I like to say, which means nothing. It's robotic. Same thing with love and light. It's robotic to me. What you do is you start to defeat the programming. And the real defeat of that programming comes when you're not afraid to look at anything in the face and say, I am that, and I am also not that. I am but am, om tat sat om. I am all of this, and I am none of this simultaneously.
Wow, that's great. You know, I have one more question before I turn it back over to Mark. For the both of you, in reference to, I think it was Dr. Bartlett that was talking about Don Juan and Carlos Castaneda. And I don't know if you've ever read their books, The Art of Dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
In The Art of Dreaming, Don Juan is talking about a perception that comes through the heart. He actually talks about it coming through the middle of your back. And that sort of cord of perception tunes you into the third dimensional reality where you live. And if you could move that band of awareness or perception, I don't know if it's up or down or right or left or whatever, but you change the perception of the band and you change your perception of this field that holds you in this third dimensional awareness. Now, I had this clarity shortly after I read this when I was in a meditation about each of the chakras that are, you have bands moving through the chakra coming in the back and out the front that actually connect you and stabilize you in third dimensional reality. But they're also, if you look into the band itself, that's the morphic field. And the different chakras seem to tune you into a different band of humanity. Now, this might be really out there for some people, but I think you'll get it. And maybe you can help me explain it, at least from your perspective. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about, but to me it's a limited perspective because I don't believe in chakras, just like I don't believe in trees. I mean, yes, I can look out the window and I can see a tree. And if I train myself, which I have, I can see chakras. Does that mean they're real? Not particularly. When I realized that in Tibet, I think it is, they can see five chakras on a man, and in somewhere else they can see seven. Or you've got pictures of Jesus where they all look like the son of the Pope, because the Pope actually, what was the name of the guy, Melissa? The Pope actually had his son painted as the image of Jesus for the whole world and confiscated all the pictures of the Arabic or the more swarthy Jesus, because he couldn't explain why we were going to war against the Islamic world when they looked just like Jesus. And all the pictures of Jesus until the time that he had that repainted all pictured a Mid-Eastern fellow. So then those were all destroyed, and there are rumors those are still in the Vatican. But here's my point. If that's all you've ever seen, I guarantee even Yogananda saw Jesus that way, even though until this rebranding of Jesus occurred, no one saw Jesus that way. So it's all very interesting.
Carlos Castaneda, you know, talks about the movement of the assemblage point, and you move the assemblage point, and you literally create an entirely new configuration of chakras or the auric field that is informing the physical body and a personal perspective reality. With respect to your question and your hypothesis, which is awesome, around morphic fields, what we've come to understand is that torsion fields are everywhere in the fabric of the universe. So torsion fields are what hold the information that informs everything to do whatever it does based on resonance. Our chakras, if you will, are in each individual chakra is actually a series of torsion fields. So it's a series of like donuts spinning with information nested within them. Those individual torsion fields are in constant communication not only with the biophotons of our personal physical body, but they're also in an ongoing conversation with the various morphic fields that comprise universal consciousness. So when we change up the configuration or the spin in our individual chakras, whether we call them chakras or goldfish or torsion fields, it doesn't matter. When we change up the spin and allow for a different configuration to express, that automatically changes up the communication that's taking place with the torsion fields in the morphic fields, and it changes up the resonance. So I would say that you're definitely on to something, but following back on Richard's reference of consider not approaching it from such a limited frame of reference, because as long as you're only seeing chakras, that's all you'll be able to notice and experience. But yes, our auric fields and our chakras, there is a constant communication taking place between our personal field and morphic fields of consciousness.
Lovely answer. Thank you. All right, Mark, do you have anything else you want to ask?
Sure. Joy, I noticed from your picture it looks like you're wearing what I don't know what you would call it, almost like an electronic EMF shielder.
That's my cow branding.
And I think I saw one on Richard, too. Did I see those correctly?
Yeah, that's the Matrix Energetics logo. It's an archetype.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure.
I'd like to comment on that, if I may. What happened with that, I didn't come up with that and decide to create an emblem that represents Matrix Energetics. I was sitting in my bedroom one day, about a month before the first seminar I ever taught, which was April of 2003. And I was thinking I need a symbol, you know, like Batman, something for the New Age community. And I swear to you, sitting on my bed, this thing appeared floating against my Venetian blinds in my bedroom in a huge, like a shield size, in full color, exactly as you see it on our pictures. And I took that into the office, and a bunch of people commented on it, and that's how it became our logo. It actually literally appeared out of thin air.
Wow, that's powerful. So, Melissa, for someone who's not familiar with the program, what is the first book you recommend that they read?
Well, I would actually go out on a limb and recommend that they read M. Joy Practically Speaking, Matrix Energetics, and Living Your Infinite Potential. And even though it's my book and I'm biased, the reason that I would recommend readers consider that book perhaps before they read the other two books, which are also phenomenal, Matrix Energetics and The Physics of Miracles, The Physics of Miracles, Richard and I co-wrote together. I wrote the book as a journey into the field of the heart and a means of navigating through everyday life. So the book is very it's very comprehensive, and there's a lot of science and there's a lot of poetic spirituality woven throughout the pages. And at the same time, it's very practical. And so the reason I think I would recommend it, and Richard, you can certainly give a different recommendation, is that it is the most current description of what we think this field of consciousness is all about. And it really speaks to the reader in terms of integrating the information that's available in the field of matrix energetics right from the comfort of their own home. So it speaks to people who have been to a seminar and deepens their experience and expands their experience, but it also speaks to someone who has no frame of reference for what matrix energetics is. Perhaps they have no experience in the practice of energy medicine, and they're just looking to improve their relationship or change their job or put more money in their bank account. It really speaks to everyone. Richard, what book would you recommend?
Melissa just said everything I would have said. She said it better, and she wrote it better.
Okay. You know, for people that come to, well, let's talk about the seminars, and then I'll give you the question there. Where are you both going to be speaking next, and is there a different, you know, do you have, like, beginners lectures versus ones that more advanced students come to, or, you know, where are you going next?
Well, our next seminar is actually this weekend in Denver, Colorado, August 8th through the 11th, and that is our Matrix Energetics Fundamentals Seminar. That is the introduction to the field of Matrix Energetics. While it is a very comprehensive course, it is the first course that is required in order for students to continue on with some of the advanced teachings. And it's perhaps our favorite course because it's really all about getting out of the way and allowing for the field to move through us as we are doorways for consciousness potential. We really master the art of doing nothing and dropping into the field of the heart. And we teach our students the two-point, time travel, parallel universes and application, something called archetypes, which is where we move from imagination to perception. We teach the 21 universal frequencies that are thought to govern healing and disease in the human species. We teach something called modules, windows, templates. It's really a very comprehensive, full immersion into the field of matrix energetics. And in many ways, it is all that a student needs in order to transform any pattern in reality. It is the backdrop of everything that we do in matrix energetics, and it is one of our favorite classes to teach. And we will also be teaching an advanced course that follows the fundamentals known as Unplugged or Spatial Clairvoyance. And that's where we teach students how to locate patterns of information in someone's field and be able to track movements in awareness and to relocate those patterns so that a different experience can unfold. Do you want to add anything to that, Richard?
To say, Well, you would kind of say her question about assemblage points, in a way, it's moving conceptual or energetic assemblage points in order for a different reality reference or framework to be able to show up, and it can happen instantaneously.
Mm-hmm. Now, Melissa, for the Essentials class, if someone wanted to find out, kind of like you went through a number of different topics that are actually covered during that seminar, was the first book you recommended be one that would, like, introduce people to those different ideas?
Indeed. Well, MJoy, practically speaking, is not a replacement for the full immersion live interactive seminar experience, because nothing can replace that. MJoy, practically speaking, does teach the two-point time travel and parallel universes. So someone can come into rapport with the field through the pages of the book. And what the book invites is really curiosity and opening into the other ways of navigating in this field that is available to everyone, but that is consciously focused on in the Matrix Energetics Fundamentals, Magic, and Mastery seminars, as well as our newest seminar, the Field Trip. Also, we will be doing a free introduction to Matrix Energetics on Friday evening in Denver. That is open to everyone. It's from 7 to 9 p.m. More information can be found by visiting our website, again, at www.matrixenergetics.com. We teach seminars roughly every 2 weeks around the United States, as well as in Europe, every third month of the year. And the introduction to Matrix Energetics is offered all across North America on Friday night. So if someone is not sure if they want to come spend 3 or 4 days with us, but they are curious about what is possible and available through the field of Matrix Energetics, then that free introduction is a really great way to immerse oneself in the field.
Mm-hmm. Now, for your seminars like that, are they available on live telecast?
At this point, the live interactive full immersion experiential seminar is only available in person. At some point, we will be modifying that, but at this point, there is just no replacement for the hands-on and, in many cases, hands-off experience that unfolds by virtue of being there. We are working on expanding the model so that experience can be transferred at a remote location via a webcast, but we've not yet been able to reach a level where the integrity of the teachings and the immersion that is available when you're in the field personally, we have not yet been able to reach that level where we can stay in integrity with the teachings.
Mm-hmm. Now,
Richard, do you
want
to add anything? Because that's an important question.
I think that's an excellent answer. I really don't have anything to add to that. I like to say that when you come to just a Friday night, for instance, you never know what's going to happen. And I want to tell a brief story, if I may. A long time ago, last time we were in L.A., or last time I was in L.A., or I guess it was next to the last time, I was there at 4 in the afternoon, and I happened to walk in, and the stage was being set up, and everything was being prepared for the 7 o'clock opening of that free night. And there was a man sitting there in a three-piece business suit in meditation. And he wasn't budging. He had a smile on his face. And one of the staffers came over and said, you can't be in here. The seminar is not open. It won't open till 7 o'clock. Come back at 7. And they turned to this person and they said, can't I just stay here? I heard Richard on the radio, and it made me laugh, and I can't remember the last time I laughed, and I just want to be here. And we left the person alone. Well, that person, not only did they stay for the Friday night, but stayed for the whole weekend. They were a quite successful lawyer, actually. And he wound up knocking people unconscious, which is one of the weird things that can happen at the seminar, quote, healing people. He was holding his own with osteopaths and chiropractors and, quote, healers and so on. And he sent me an email later, and he said, you know, Richard, that was just the most amazing experience of my life. He said that sometimes now when he comes to his office in the morning, he says there's someone already there waiting for him, but sometimes they're not there for legal advice. They've heard that he's a layer on of hands. And so that's just a little vignette of how things can change when being exposed to this field.
Wow. Pamela?
Yes, I'm here.
You have a question?
And I have lots of questions for you. The first one relates to distant healing. Now, Mark had just talked to you about are you planning to do anything on the Internet as an example for the seminars, but what about healing in general? It would seem very clear to me that if we're talking about and working with this morphic energy fields, and it's a question of resonance, it would seem that it would be fairly easy to feel me, for example, as to how I'm resonating right now, or Mark, and be able to help someone at a distance. Do you find that that's an easy thing to do?
Jesus, what do you expect of me?
I actually find it's easier to work at a distance than to work live in person, and part of the reason, there is no distance. I mean, you are not 3,000 miles away from me right now. That is essentially an illusion of separation. Now,
right.
When we are standing in front of a so-called physical body and we are looking at someone, we tend to see what we expect to see. And working at a distance is something that can take a little bit of practice because you are developing the apertures of your awareness to track and follow what's really there, not what you have habituated yourself to noticing. But once you realize that there is no distance and that we are able to track and follow patterns of information, whether someone's standing 3 inches from us, which is still a distance, right? They're still at a distance because they're 3 inches from us, or 3,000 miles away. Way, there really is no difference. And both Richard and I work almost exclusively at a distance in our private practice. Obviously, we're not working at a distance when we're in person in a seminar, but part of what we teach our students to do is to map and follow movements in consciousness through patterns of information at a distance so that they can effectively influence healing and transformation anywhere around the world.
And I would agree with that. I heard a different question, and that's just the difference in our perceptions. What I heard is what would be involved with the whole concept of healing, and would it be easy for us with our knowledge of the field to do something like that? Well, it's very interesting because we don't consider ourselves healers, and so I don't even like the term healing. And the reason is because what I was told by a spiritual teacher a long time ago that I've never forgotten, I've already alluded to it. You think, beloved hearts, that it is through your methods and your techniques that people heal. I tell you, nay, it is not so, but it is the grace of God. And I consider the grace of God to be a contact with that loving field, which isn't necessarily about human love or human perfection, but it embraces all aspects of us, including all of our imperfections, our diseases, our conditions, and our conditioning. So for me, for instance, if someone came to me and they had cancer and their cancer did not heal, but they were now realized they were happy to die, they were not afraid to die, and that's what they were really looking for, is some aspect of self that connected with their eternal being that survives beyond these planes of alleged existence, then to me that would be a form of healing. So it's very difficult to say, and it's difficult for me because you always want to help people. I always want to help people. I think everyone is genuinely motivated by that. The thing is, as people, it is very hard to help people. But if you go to that point that I already made about Jesus and the I felt virtue go out from me, if you tap into that field and let go of the expectations of how healing or what healing means and how it could show up, then miracles are much more likely to occur. And I'm down with miracles because miracles to me are just an advanced form of science that of the heart that we do not consciously understand, yet we all have access to.
Well, that's a beautiful answer as well. I think I am so intrigued by this this the work that you do in the Matrix Energetics. And Mark actually knew that I would be. He sent me an email saying, you're going to love these folks. Because it's something that if you know me, you know that that's something that I've experienced my entire life. I would close my eyes and suddenly I'd be in another place, on another dimension, experiencing another thing. And for many years, well, most of my life, I never told anyone, and I never expressed it to anyone because I thought it was just this level of insanity that I had. What I ended up doing with this in most, from the probably for the past 30 years, however, is I got involved. I kept getting called back to this kind of an underworld where I was helping people cross over that were sort of stuck in this limbo. And it's kind of this shamanic kind of level of energy. And I was wondering, and I'm actually doing a doctorate thesis right now on healing the dead. And I was wondering about matrix energies as it related to people that have already transitioned.
Melissa, why don't you answer that?
Well, I mean, before I answer your question, if you haven't done work with the Monroe Institute, I would highly recommend that you explore some of their programs, particularly Lifelines, because that specific program is all about soul retrieval and going out and finding people that are, well, they're dead, but they don't know they're dead. And, you know, at a certain level, you're doing soul retrieval of another, but it is also retrieval of oneself at the soul level, too. With that being said, the question very much does fit into everything that we do in Matrix Energetics, minus the rule sets. So there is a lot of shamanism embedded within the field of Matrix Energetics without the kind of... Sometimes there's like almost like a victim dualistic mentality that comes in the realm of shamanism. And while we've got the ability to navigate through any terrain of consciousness, we do so with a great degree of flexibility and a great degree of playfulness. So does soul retrieval and movement of consciousness from a discarnate into back to the light, so to speak, happen in Matrix Energetics? Absolutely. Does it happen because we try to make it happen? Not so much. It happens because in the process of navigating through various terrains of consciousness with individuals, we might encounter a discarnate or a soul that perhaps is in resonance with a nodal point of a ship that went down, you know, 500 years ago. So it does come up. It just comes up in a very flexible, playful way. Does that make sense to you?
Of course. One of the things I do, and one of the main things I do, is I'm a medium, and I do a lot of grief counseling for people that have lost close ones. And, I'm referred to a lot of psychologists and other people in my life refer people to me for that purpose. So I'm in that situation a lot where I've got someone in front of me that says, okay, I want to talk to the one that's passed on. So I end up in that situation. That's what I do, which on one level or another, I think Matrix Energetics would be a lovely approach.
I would agree that it would be a very nice complement to what you're already doing. What you may find, and Richard can add to this response, is that what has historically been a model of mediumship, where essentially you sort of vacate your body to allow for a different expression of consciousness to move through your container, what you might find with Matrix Energetics is the ability to be to remain fully present and fully aware as you as an individual, and you can have the conversation with whomever has departed. So there's
That's
a lot more conscious abilities that can be cultivated so that you can move beyond the the model in the morphic field of traditional mediumship so that you can be more present in the experience.
Nice. I don't vacate my body. I never have. But I do see validity as far as the matrix energetics concept, because it deals with very similar vibrations or frequencies. You know,
Richard,
you open
what would you
yourself
share
up.
On this?
Well,
pardon me?
I was hoping Melissa would share her experience with my father, because it's funny and it's instructive at the same time.
Well, you're welcome to share it. I thought it was really personal, so I just kind of didn't
all
go
right,
there.
Well,
you're
I
welcome
not?
To share it. It's your dad.
I would rather
so.
You do it. I would rather you do it because you. I don't want to tell it wrongly, and you tell it so perfectly because you have the experience more than I.
Well, I mean, the experience, to make a very long story short, is, you know, when we leave our bodies, we don't die. We just return to that which is consciousness. And if ever we had a doubt around this, which we didn't, but if we did, when Richard's father did finally pass away, you know, he really wanted to let us know that he was okay. And so he decided to, you know, come back and kind of hang out with me for a couple days. And really kind of the way that I knew it was his dad is that he just kept following me in the bathroom. And I was like, that is just such a Bartlett. So that's the story he wanted me to share.
Well, I mean, the thing is, he came back, he appeared to me and my friend William. We were watching TV, about to watch a movie in a hotel where we were teaching, and he said, well, I'm dead. And he was floating in the air, and the TV started, you know, basically we couldn't get our channel back, and we're like, Dad, could you move to the side a little bit? But then he loved Melissa. Melissa is wonderful and beautiful and smart and just has such a great heart. And so he's a ladies' man. And so he came to her, and she could see him and interact with him. And she basically taught him a little bit about, you know, the other side. And then he was like a child, and he was full of wonder. And then he still shows up, I guess, sometimes, like, you know, in shorts and cargo shorts and sipping a pina colada and talking how he'd just come from an island somewhere. And so he's having a ball. But Melissa had just a natural interaction with him. It was really quite beautiful. It was healing for me because I didn't see that like she did. I think I was too close to that. But she had just a wonderful back and forth repartee with him. And it was very healing for me.
Sometimes healing shows up in the form of death. I mean, it is just a different expression of transformation. And so sometimes that can be the most powerful healing that takes place when we let go of the need to hang on. And now that's a completely expansive perspective. You know, obviously we all want to live here as long as we can, but when it was time for him to go, he was ready. And he lived a wonderful life, and yes, indeed, he's now enjoying pina coladas in Costa Rica on a pretty regular basis.
Lovely. Thank you for sharing that story with us.
Well, that's great. And as always, it's great to have you on the show, Pam. Thank you.
As we kind of wrap up
the show, I want to just reach out to you, Melissa, and you, Richard, as we always do on the show as tradition, and that is, can you share with the audience, for both of you, what is the biggest lesson in life you'd like to share with everybody?
The one I'm still trying to learn, humility. I mean, it is so amazing when you get out of your habitual way of thinking and you set it aside, even for the blink of an eye, and you let go of all your preconceived notions about reality and what it is, and in the very next moment, it's like the eye of God winks at you and says, "You see, it's not so bad, or it's different." And the beauty of it is, it's kind of like Krishna hiding behind the trees and playing his flute, and the women trying to find him. Reality hides just behind the veil. But you get glimpses of it in everything, and that's what's so beautiful about this process, because you start to look at everything as patterns of information and light and resonance, and And they're all opportunities for, quote, healing and learning and transcendence and growth. And so it's just, it's an amazing life.
Melissa?
Well, I would say that more than anything, I've learned that reality is not something that happens to us, that we are active co-creators with this beautiful essence of universal consciousness that some would call love, and that no matter what appears to be happening around us, what circumstances appear to be showing up consistently as patterns in our awareness, we are never, ever stuck. There are always options. There are always various possibility states that surround us in any given moment, and if we give ourselves permission to notice them, to trust in them, and to allow for those various possibility states to unfold as something different, then indeed our reality will unfold differently too. So no matter what someone may be going through, they are not that experience. They are so much more than that experience. And, you know, the universe is just like a giant puppy dog. It wants to play with us. And we just invite all the listeners to really open into a state of childlike wonder and curiosity and give themselves permission to play.
Very cool. So with that, thank you. And if you could just, Melissa, if you could just give out the website to everybody so they can find out what city you're going to be in next.
Indeed, here is a subliminal advertisement, www.matrixenergetics.com. Dr. Richard Bartlett and Melissa Joy will be teaching Matrix Energetics Fundamentals in Denver, Colorado this Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, August 8th through the 11th. We will also
be in Houston, San Diego, Atlanta, and various
cities around the world.
I love it. You guys are fun. All right. Well, as always, thanks for being on, and thank you for being on Spiritual Connections Radio. Good night,
thank
everybody.
Thank you so much for having us. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Life is but a dream.